This is the 23rd session in the Laws of Life. We're exploring the law of creation tonight. Our question is, what is the divine law of creation and how can aspirants best harness it? And shuffled the cards and laid them out, and our spread is as follows. It's up on the screen if you can see the screen. Starting point is the Four of Rods upside down. Their counterpoint is death, right side up. The challenge is the Knight of Pentacles, right side up. The purpose is the Nine of Cups, upside down. The endowment is the Ace of Pentacles, upside down. The destiny is the Chariot, right side up. The real question is the Sun, upside down. The hidden forces, unseen forces, Six of Swords, right side up. The spiritual ideal is the Ten of Swords, right side up. And the culmination is the Eight of Pentacles, upside down. We therefore have five upright and five reversed. And we have three majors, two swords, one rod, one cup, and three pentacles. We also have two fours. The first two cards are fours, the Four of Rod. And death is 13 in the major arcana, which makes a four. And we have the two ones. The sun is number 19, which reduces to a one. And then the Ten of Swords and the one and the zero makes one, both in the Pillar of Revelation. And
an ace?
I'm sorry?
Is there an ace?
Is there an ace? There is an ace, so that's a 1-2. So we have three ones, you're absolutely right. The Ace of Pentacles is in the position of the endowment. So we have also we have a whole bunch of repeats from last time when we were talking about sex, the law of sex, which there would be resonances with the law of creation because sex is procreation. We have repeating in different locations. What do we have?
Two. Death. Number two card.
Death.
Death.
Number
three, Knight.
The Knight of Pentacles.
And Nine of Cups.
The Nine of Cups, the Ace of Pentacles. Pentacles.
And the Eight of Pentacles.
The Eight of Pentacles. So we have five repeating cards. Did we not have the Four of Pentacles in the last one?
Four of Rods.
Four of Rods. Where was that last time?
It was down here.
Okay, it was in the purpose. All right. Well, that's where we're starting. So our six cards repeating.
Right.
And that's natural and to be expected because when we started this a month ago, I said that there was going to be a series of three, polarity, sex, and then creation, and they would work together, and so naturally many of the cards are repeated even if in different locations. So there are resonances. Also, the other thing here is that the law of creation is the law, the creative process works through the principle of resonance or vibration. And so these repeating cards create that sense of continuity, that sense of vibration. They set up a vibration which carries over from the last investigation to this one. So these are subtle commentaries on our subject. Let's get right on then to the law of creation. And we'll start at the beginning with the starting point, the Four of Rods.
Wait,
yes.
This is not doing anything.
It's not. Yes, it is. You can see up here. It doesn't actually have to be on, but you can see as long as
this
that red bar.
Moving.
That's all right. That's the.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
Okay. So the starting point is the Four of Rods, and the Four of Rods is the only rod in this, and it's very significant that it's at the starting point because the law of creation is a mental process. This is the science of thought. And as we learn to harness our thoughts and work effectively with our thinking skills, we tap the capacity to create. And this, of course, is a card we've seen many times, not just last time, but many times. It's medieval in origin, and the fact that it's a four is a number of creativity. So we have here the starting point is the law of, for the law of creation is the essence of creativity. But what we have here is the idea that the mind, as you've heard me say before, is designed to entertain thoughts, specifically to entertain archetypal thoughts and patterns of the mind and God. And so creativity is the question, is the law of creation as it applies to human beings, is the ability to precipitate divine designs into the physical plane to influence and shape life. Specifically, we can look at the flowers at the top of the four rods. And we normally interpret those in terms of celebration, but in this particular case, they strike me as being the seeds of thought, seed thoughts. And, of course, the law of creation is we create the seeds, and then we plant and nurture the seeds using divine love and power, strength, and we protect them and we cultivate them and we bring them to fruition. Be fruitful and multiply starts by creating seeds. The law of creation, the act of creation, is not one of actually creating something out of nothing, except here on earth. But the something that we create is always linked back to a pattern or a seed thought or a seed atom. Even our life, as you know, is shaped from various permanent atoms that carry over from lifetime to lifetime. And part of the mystery of death is that we create these permanent atoms, or what Dion Fortune, in Through the Gates of Death, called seed atoms. And so the art here, the whole art of the law of creation, is that it's not what we create in the physical world that counts, but rather what we're able to, patterns, the seeds we're able to create mentally, the patterns of genius. This is why probably the most profound technique that I teach in the basic course is the pattern of genius. And I hope everybody uses this at least once a week to explore the inner dimensions of life. Because this is where the law of creation really comes into full flower, is that the great work of any genius, whether it's a Mozart or a Beethoven or a Descartes or a great master or whoever it might be, the real work of the genius is to establish clear seed thoughts and patterns at the mental level so that other people can be influenced and overshadowed by them and integrate them into their own thinking. It's not the physical plane that where the manifestation works, or the creation really works. One of the principal characteristics of creation is that it's what we create mentally that makes all the difference and endures and lasts. And so we have to get used to thinking in that way. And in fact, the great explanation, the great definition of the law of creation is from the Bible. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And this pretty much tells the story. As we think, as we learn and are capable of focusing our thought on virtue, on divine realities and laws, and we hold our thought steady in the pursuit of those ethics and principles, then we start to shape our life in creative, productive ways. Now, the bottom line here is that everybody shapes their life under the law of karma. If you lust, as the Christ say, if you lust in your heart for something, then you're creating, you're establishing patterns of karma which draw that to you and have to be satisfied. And so everybody uses this law either intelligently or unintelligently, either wisely or foolishly. Our exploration here is to reveal the creative potential of the human being and to emphasize the fact that we need to guard our thoughts very carefully so they're constructive and productive, not destructive or self-limiting in any way. So we come then to that's the starting point, and the starting point is in paradise, is in heaven, is in Eden, the four of rods here. And then we come to the counterpoint, and we have death, and that may seem a strange thing to have there, but we have to keep in mind that ultimately the work of creativity, even though we shape these patterns and create them and establish them at the mental level where they persist from one lifetime to the next lifetime, the ultimate purpose of any of this is to precipitate these patterns, these seeds, into the physical plane. It's just like out front here in our yard, we have dozens of daffodils blooming and cheerfully radiating their golden and white light on both sides of our driveway. And this happens every year if we take the time to plant the bulbs and nurture them and let them grow up. But nothing... There is no permanent creativity in the physical plane. They die. Every form dies, and that's the purpose of death here. It's the counterpoint of creativity. Is everything we were talking about, Rose and I were talking about this as we were driving around this afternoon doing our errands. There is a value to extinction. And the notion that we have today in our ecologically obsessed thinking is that we should prevent any life form from ever becoming extinct. Can you imagine us living here in the woods with dinosaurs still tromping around and everybody would have to have dinosaur insurance lest some T-Rex stomped down on our house and reduced it to splinters. It would be a worse problem than fire or vandalism or theft or burglary. It would be the T-Rex phenomena. And so everybody would, it would be, you're in good hands with Allstate. You don't have to worry about being stomped on by T-Rex. So I think everybody can agree pretty much unanimously that it's not a bad idea that certain animals have become extinct. Well, that's the power of death here. Forms need to be, there's only a certain limited expression that any creative activity can achieve on the physical plane, and then it needs to shuffle off this mortal coil and go back and we replant the seed. Hopefully it comes up with a brilliant daffodil each time, but we need to have this kind of cyclic manifestation here on the physical plane. What counts is the perfect seed at the mental level, not what the representation is. And that means that you and I, over the course of many lifetimes, can pursue our creative activity, whatever that might be. Mine is writing and teaching. And we can refine it and perfect it each time, each lifetime. And so you might presume that whatever you've focused on creatively in this lifetime, especially in terms of learning and growing, is built on a foundation of what you've learned and the knowledge you've acquired, the skills you've acquired in previous lifetimes. The creative force of these classes is not the actual classes themselves, but the principles that these techniques are based on, so that you can take these principles and work with these energies and integrate them into your own life. So there's this dramatic, dynamic context here of the interaction of the four rods and death, which is a four as well. Death is a not a limit of form. It is a necessary part of form, because at a certain point, we, having established some creative project on Earth, we realize this has got problems. We need to go back and come out with a new edition. And death allows us to do that. It's the ultimate editing process, I guess. So that's, we have to keep in mind that this is a cyclic kind of thing. And it's not the appearance on Earth that matters as much as the power of the ideas that we shape and create. So true creation is a mental process that produces seeds for reproduction. We then come to the challenge, the Knight of Pentacles, and this is a knight in shining armor, sauntering forth, because he's on a horse, mm-hmm. but he's riding forth to do battle with evil and conflict or whatever. And all we can see is the knight. So in this particular context, the one thing we know about the creation of the human being is, according to the Bible, we were created in God's image. And this card seems to be reinforcing that notion, because we certainly weren't created in the horse's image, although I do know a few horses' asses. But and they do a real good job of living up to that image. But the point here is that we are meant to learn about the processes of creation. God, the one thing we know about God is that he created us. So therefore we need to, and he did that out of patterns, existing patterns. He didn't pull a rabbit out of a hat. He applied cosmic patterns and laws, his own laws, to the purpose of creation. This card also suggests the need for control and discipline. The knight is in control of the horse. He doesn't let the horse lead him wherever he wants to go. He guides the horse to where he wants to go and what he wants to do. And so I've already hinted at this, I think, but there's this tremendous responsibility in creativity, is to make sure that you work always from the design, the innermost design, the ideal. There's a lot of people who don't understand that in conventional creative forms, whether it's writing or art or acting or whatever. They think that if they act with great pathos and convey their frustration and their discouragement, they're doing something creative. Garbage. They're doing something garbage. The true purpose of creativity on Earth is to bring heaven to Earth, and we have a duty to exercise control. We need to be able to focus the mind in the archetypal ideals and designs, the laws of life. That's why we're doing this course, to find out what these laws are and how we can activate them. We need to be able to hold our mind steady in that. As a man thinketh in his heart, in his innermost being, in the innermost essence of the seed, as we learn to hold the seed of joy or harmony or beauty in our mind, then we can create with it. But if all we're doing is trying to smudge some muddy colored paints on a canvas and then call it art, we're missing the boat. We're not becoming creators. We're becoming destroyers. And we're afflicting poisons and toxins on our fellow human being and on ourselves. And again, we need to keep in mind that every one of us, whether we think of ourselves as creative or not, does come under the law of creation, because when we focus intensely on worry or fear or grief or any kind of negativity, we're generating an aura of noxious energies that will lead creatively to consequences we don't care for. Under the law of cause and effect, the law of karma, we create conditions. If we treat other people cruelly, we create conditions in future lives in which we will suffer that same cruelty. And so we need this control. We need to understand that this is a divine act. It's not something to mess around with. It's not something to take lightly. There are responsibilities. There are criteria. So we need to be focused in the higher dimensions of life, not placating or pandering to the whims of the horse that is supposed to be taking us places. Of course, the horse stands for the emotions, the wildness of emotional reactions. We have this concept reinforced when we come down to the purpose card, the Nine of Cups, because our journeyman here on the worker is a symbol for the need for the impersonal life. He's actually a symbol of the highly personal life, who takes great pride in his accomplishments, in his personal abilities and skills, and looks down upon other people with a sneer as to, how dare you compare me to them? And so, again, this emphasizes the fact that in order to work with the law of creation, we have to be detached, we have to be impersonal. We aren't doing this for our own glory, we're doing this for God's glory. We're working to bring the glorious elements of the mind of God down into the lower mental plane, where other human beings can be inspired by them. We're trying to take the laws of life as set forth in the mind of God and translate them into the things that we can express in our life and other people can respond to. So the Nine of Cups is a card of fulfillment and achievement, but we have to be very careful to recognize that this is work that is not unique to us. It's work that is shared by every member of the human family and the human race. And so we're not special, to quote the church lady. We are simply pursuing our design as a human being and creating as high a expression of life as we're capable of doing. And that should be linked to divine forces, divine seeds, such as beauty and joy and harmony and glory. And there can't be any sense of, God loves me more than anybody else because he has given me the ability to express joy or glory. With that comes a responsibility to express it in a way that can enlighten the lives of as many people as possible. And in that context, I think something like sequence of sonnets by John Masefield on beauty is a good example of this. Undoubtedly, he's spent many lifetimes working with the seed of beauty, and that sonnet series was just the form in which it took in this lifetime. But he will be back again and again and again, and has been back again and again and again as an agent of beauty. And so our creative work is not interrupted by death, but merely allows us to change venue and change focus so that we can continue to pursue our work. We then come to the endowment, the Ace of Pentacles. That is the keynote of the physical plane. Of course, that keynote is productivity. And so there is the expectation that we bring these seeds down into the physical plane. We are we're cultivating the soil on earth so that heavenly issues can grow and be planted and flourish and develop. And so, yes, the earth is the plane in which this happens, but the real dynamic of creativity, as I said, exists at the mental level. Once you have shaped the ethics or the values of the matrix of your thinking at mental levels, it's almost a foregone conclusion that it will take shape in one way or another on Earth. But again, let me reemphasize that there's a positive and a negative side to that. We'll see that with the Chariot, the next card of Destiny, the happy face and the face of comedy and the face of tragedy. I think one of the great examples of the law of creation in play at work in the last 100 years would be the Nazi Germany, where Hitler, I'm not advocating this in any way, and this is unfortunately an illustration by the negative, but he created a climate, a national climate of fear and paranoia and hatred that then was precipitated down into Germany, and the German people were responsive to that and ate it up eagerly and found strength in that bizarre distortion. And historians have since wondered why, and sociologists have wondered why, and psychologists have wondered why the German nation was so eager to embrace Hitler and make him their champion. But it shouldn't, if you understand the law of creation, all he was doing was working with the seeds of thought, not very noble ones either, that constituted the ethos of the German people at that time. And he precipitated that. And it's the type of thing that it was done without any sense of responsibility, any sense of allegiance to the divine, any sense of maturity. And so it became an ugly manifestation of bigotry and raw power. And that's exactly what we need to try to avoid. It's it's a classic example of how these seed thoughts can precipitate and guide and direct and create a powerful juggernaut in a whole nation. But and influence other people too. There were people in England that were very sympathetic to the German cause. And as revolting as it was, there were people who were willing to look past their revulsion. We have Thinking Out Loud tomorrow, and we're talking about tolerance and intolerance. And I think most thinking people would say that it would have been wonderful, it would have been ideal if there had been a few intolerant people in Germany other than the ones in power. People who were intolerant of their abuse of power and refused to go along with it. Of course, they'd be dead before the war began. They'd be dead before they could do anything effective. But I think that makes an excellent illustration of the fact that we need to draw lines and recognize that we always have to keep the goal in mind. Go back to the four rods. You can see through the four rods the castle in the distance. That's the goal. We have to have a creative goal of serving God and doing this for the glory of God, not for the glory of a nation, not for the glory of a business, not for one's personal pride and achievement in the Knight of Cups. But we need to understand that this is we're creating a powerful structure, not just an occasional seed here and there, but the potential is to create a whole massive structure of values and principles that can guide and lead a whole church, a whole wave of thinking, a school of art, a school of acting, a school of whatever it might be, a whole new movement in these things. And so that's what we're talking about here with the chariot. The chariot implies that as we develop these skills in creation, we harness a great deal of power. There's the seed thoughts that we create and generate with our genius and our inspiration, if they're properly linked to divine patterns of inspiration, they will automatically bring with them tremendous power to implement them. And again, you've got to keep this in focus. You might say, well, if that's the case, then why isn't there instant enlightenment of the planet Earth? Well, because there are millions and billions of people on the planet Earth, and reaching every one of them requires a huge, huge expenditure of power. But this is the power to endure rather than anything else. Keep in mind that Christianity has endured for 2,000 years, Hinduism has endured for thousands of years, Buddhism as well, and had a tremendous impact upon the world. And yet, there's still imperfection, there's still doubt, there's still things that people haven't responded to. That's not the failure of the law of creation, it's not the failure of the people involved, it's the failure of humanity to respond to these things. But we're going to see in the chariot, and we'll see again in the Six of Swords and the Ten of Swords when we get over to them, that there's great power that comes with the law of creation generates great power. And this is where we need to build up our skills and our resources to be able to handle that power effectively, lest it destroy us. We are doing nothing less than bringing heaven to earth and creating avenues in which that can transform earth. So then we come down to the pillar of revelation. And we have the sun is the real question. And the sun is a great big heavenly orb radiating golden light. And doing it through the mind, again, through books, through knowledge, through wisdom. And so the question here is, what is the source that feeds this creativity? And what actions will best fulfill that source? And this is where this is the ultimate guarantee that we'll be in harmony with and in line with divine purpose, because while Hitler was able to sound a keynote that rallied the German nation to his side and support for his campaign, nonetheless, it wasn't connected to the spirit of Germany. It was connected to a disfigured imitation of the spirit of Germany, and got them into a whole lot of trouble. So the work of creation is always one that we have to ask the question constantly, what is the source of inspiration? What is the genuine driving energy behind this, and how best can we serve it? It's fairly easy to think of this in the abstract, for example, of the source of beauty inspiring John Masefield in writing his poetry. It's a little bit more difficult to think of it in terms of other forms, but the whole work of art is to reveal the divine behind the physical plane. And we are the agents for this work of creation. And that's what the next two cards talk about. The Six of Swords is the hidden forces, and the Six of Swords is the wise master driving his boat across the sea of the emotions and harnessing the power of creation to move forward toward his destination, toward his goal. And we have to understand that there's many aspects of the human life and the power of creation that we don't understand because history has done a very bad job, very incomplete job of recording this. And the fact of the matter is that the Renaissance occurred because the hierarchy stimulated the creative juices of humanity and a whole bunch of people incarnated that had the talent to do what they did in the Renaissance. But this was all the result of a tremendous stimulation, almost an initiation of humanity that we call the Renaissance. Well, this is always, again, if you go back to the source and look at this from the source point, you can appreciate that all the important developments in human thinking and human behavior have been impelled by this kind of initiating creativity. And so when I talk about the fact that the war on terror is a necessary prelude to eliminating terror from the planet Earth so that we can bring in new forms of energy that will revolutionize our creativity and our technology, I'm not just whistling Dixie here. I'm talking about, well, I might be whistling Dixie here. I wear it down in Georgia. But I don't know how to whistle. I just pucker up and blow. But the point is that there's tremendous motivation and momentum behind the need to prepare humanity to work with subtler forms of energy so that we can learn basically to draw our electrical energy out of the atmosphere and directly apply it to running equipment and appliances and so on, thereby liberating us from the need to generate energy in conventional ways, whether through solar power or fossil fuels or whatever, and thereby eliminating that whole problem of pollution and depletion of resources. The Earth itself is a charged atmosphere of electricity, and we need, the next great step forward is to learn how to draw that electricity directly out of the atmosphere and then put it to work. Well, that's something that will happen because the hierarchy deems it safe to unleash that kind of power for humanity. But until humanity has demonstrated the self-restraint and control of the Knight of Pentacles, it can't be released. And so there's this tremendous power of creativity that's just waiting to transform technology and science, but it's pent up. It can't be released because it would be destructive. We've been there and done that once before with Atlantis, and without safeguards, and nasty people got a hold of it and used it for their own personal aggrandizement and blew up Atlantis as a result. Well, all right, it's not likely that the hierarchy is going to make that mistake twice. And yet, we have to understand that that's how great new surges of growth and development happen in the human family. They happen through the creative tip of initiation. So then we come down and come up to the Ten of Swords, and the Ten of Swords is clearly heaven coming down to earth and through the aegis of the creative person laying flat on his stomach and being pinned down by these spiritual energies. That, of course, is symbolic, but the individual human being, the individual aspirant, learns to work with creativity by recognizing that his own life is supposed to be a creative masterpiece, what we talked about as the greatest masterpiece in the Art of Living series. And so we learn that we can harness these divine seeds and the divine archetypes in our own approach to life, in our own approach to helping other people, and in our own approach to solving the problems we confront in the physical plane. And that's the spiritual ideal, bringing heaven to earth, individualizing the impersonal energies of heavenly design, the seeds, and then precipitating them into our life. And when that happens, then we come to the Eight of Pentacles, and the law of creation becomes the basis of construction, of building the new society, of building the glory of God's design here on earth. Always, again, with a sense of the open window into the inner dimensions of life through which inspiration flows, but building according to plan, according to blueprint, according to the opportunities available to us. But we have a tremendous, the law of creation, as we learn to harness that and use that, our constructive activities become more and more a opportunity for the initiation of new trends, new possibilities in human growth, and in science and in art and in education and in all of these things. So I'm going to stop there, having gone from the starting point to the culmination, and entertain comments and questions. Anybody have comments or questions about the law of creation? Anybody? No comments or questions? Well, that's it for this session then. I thank you all, and we'll do this again in a couple of weeks. A different topic, different law, but that's it for tonight. Thank you.